5V is the interaction between the investment entity amendments and the exemption from preparing consolidated financial statement in IFRS 10. At November meeting, the interpretation committee discussed request to clarify whether the exemption set out in paragraph 4 of IFRS 10, that is, if an intermediate parent need not present consolidated financial statement, is available to entities that is under the investment entity amendments. And please take a look at page 3 of agenda paper 5B. I presented paragraph 4 of IFRS 10. So IFRS 10 requires a parent entity to present consolidated financial statements. However, paragraph 4 provides an exemption that a parent need not present consolidated financial statements if the entity meets all the criteria in paragraph 4A, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And one of the criteria, 4A4, is that its ultimate or any intermediate parent produces consolidated financial statements that are available for public use and comply with IFRS. So consequently, the exemption from presenting consolidated financial statement in paragraph 4A is not applicable to an intermediate parent entity of investment entity. And we analyzed which user would benefit if intermediate parent were to present consolidated financial statements if we require, in addition to the current requirement. And as I mentioned, the criteria 4A1, 2, 3, and 4, everything should be met. So it means 4A1, for example, if minority shareholder need a consolidated financial statement, that need is covered. And if there is a debt holder or equity holder, that need is covered under 4A2. And if there is an IPO, that need is covered under 4A3. So what we considered is that the main stakeholders' needs for the consolidated financial statement is basically covered under 4A1, 2, and 3. And if these conditions are met, we think that the exemption from presenting consolidated financial statement should be also available to the investment entity. So that is why we are proposing the amendment in that line.
Comments, reactions? Scott?
The analysis the staff provides is logical in deciding, you know, suggesting that 4A4 isn't all that important here, but it would also suggest that 4A4 isn't important in any other situation either. But why is it only for investment entities that 4A4 isn't important? So I can't support the staff's proposal because I think it basically we're saying the board was wrong to include 4A4 as a requirement, and therefore, you know, we're going to blow it away in a situation where we can blow it away. But if we really think 4A4 isn't important, then we ought to be recommending to the board that they take it out, not that we find a way to get around it when there's an investment entity involved.
In that case, so all the intermediate parents will be required to present consolidated financial statement.
Yes.
I would say that we're not saying that the board was wrong to have that condition in there in other circumstances. I think what we're saying or what we're acknowledging is that in making the investment entity amendments, the board acknowledged that in that particular circumstance, the most useful information is the fair value information in the ultimate parent's financial statements. And so that is the basis on which we are arriving at this conclusion.
I understand. I just said that I don't think the analysis should come to any different conclusion because there's an investment entity involved in it. There's nothing in there that suggests to me that there's a difference.
Do
Tony, and then we'll just work our way around.
I follow the logic in the staff paper. I understand what Scott says, but I guess I'd be in the same place as the staff, that it seems to me that the to the extent that this is a wholly owned subsidiary, the information is going to be available to the parent to start with. To the extent that it's not wholly owned, the other shareholders had the opportunity to object to this approach, and this information wasn't provided previously before the investment entity amendment. And so, given that the board's concluded that the fair value information one level up is the most useful, it seems to me that the staff's logic flows, so I support where the staff have got to.
Mirage?
I understand the logic, but I'm worried about the consequences of getting there, particularly in case of LBOs. In case of an LBO, where it's 100% owned by an investment entity, that means that the entity will not produce consolidated financial statements. I understand that banks can get the information, shareholders can get the information, but what about employees and suppliers? In case of LBOs, getting consolidated financial statements might be quite important. So I'm a little bit torn or worried. I'm worried getting there, not necessarily opposing, but I'm worried about the consequences in some specific situations, such as LBOs.
So you're worried, just to make sure I understand, you're worried about a leveraged buyout of the sub?
Okay. Yes.
Andrew?
I support the staff recommendation on this. I think the intermediate parent company consolidation exemption is a cost-benefit issue, as the paper explains. I don't think the fact that the board decided to give a consolidation exception for a higher level parent entity that is an investment entity should have presumably the unintended consequence that the intermediate parent company suddenly needs to start consolidating when it didn't do before. As regards 4A4, I mean, Scott makes a perfectly legitimate challenge. I wouldn't object to deleting the word consolidated financial statements, because if there's a higher level parent that complies with IFRS, it will consolidate unless it's an investment entity.
Point taken. John?
I don't support the staff recommendation. My views are the same as in the last meeting. I don't believe that a non-investment entity intermediate parent should be exempt from consolidation. Some of these are very significant companies in their own right, and I think that the paper too quickly dismisses the needs of potential users other than the shareholders. So I don't support the recommendation.
Okay, I'd like to bring Alan in, and then we'll go back to Reinhardt.
I admit I struggle with this a little bit, because I was thinking about an investment entity as somebody, an entity that's got a lot of people putting pension funds, for example, into it. So I assume that they are reporting. And the way I read the wording of the draft of amending 4A4 was to imply that they didn't have to report. And it just seemed I couldn't understand the logic of this, and that we had this investment entity exception, so that you've got this investment entity itself as preparing financial statements, but now you say, well, actually, if you've got an ultimate parent, you don't have to. And it's not an ultimate investment entity parent, it's an ultimate parent. So I'm assuming that we've done all of this exception because there is a need for that entity itself to report, but then they don't have to report. So I was trying to work out the logic of why we would almost implicitly exclude them from reporting. Because there is, as I said, difference between an ultimate parent and the investment entity itself, which presumably is reporting to all of its investors. And then see some of the arguments in here about trade creditors and all sorts of things, and I'm trying to think how important they are in a pension fund, for example, or some sort of real investment fund. So perhaps they are, but not quite the same.
I think this comes back. When we were doing the investment entity amendments, we had this difficulty in terminology, in what you call the accounts of an investment entity that has no subsidiaries to consolidate, because they're still a form of accounts that represent the entire group. But we have a definition in the glossary that talks about consolidated financial statements being a, or consolidation being a line by line. And I think this is where the tension arises. And I think Andrew's comment there may actually resolve lots of issues if we just in paragraph 4A4 just delete the word consolidated and require the parent company, the ultimate parent, to produce financial statements in accordance with IFRS. And that would cover all parents, whether they're investment entities or not, which I think picks up on Alan's point there. It's, you know, the intermediate parents and all of the subsidiaries have been incorporated into the IFRS financial statements of the ultimate parent. There's just different methodologies for how that incorporation happens.
John, did you have something else you wanted to bring in there? Okay, we're going to go to Joanna, Reinhardt, over to Don, and then back to Laurence.
Alan has confused and worried me, and I'm not sure that what you say actually does solve it, because Andrew's solution deals with the top company. It doesn't deal with, if I understand Alan correctly, he's actually saying we're implying that this intermediate company no longer has to report. And to me, and that's where I'm confused and worried, because I didn't think this was doing that. And if it is, we somehow need to fix that, because to me, we shouldn't give that, as you say, all these people are putting in their pensions. It just stops them doing consolidating as opposed to doing fair value accounting. To me, they still damn well have to report. Of course they have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have to report in accordance with the investment, if they are an investment entity, in accordance with investment entity, they just don't have to line by line consolidate. And Patricia is dying to say something.
Well, Alan confused me too, because I thought the issue was about an intermediate parent that is not an investment entity.
Yeah.
It's an operating entity.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because this always confuses me too, if the ultimate parent were not an investment entity, we would require consolidation up, right?
Yes.
So it's not entirely clear to me why, if the intermediate parent is not an investment entity and hasn't been consolidated in an investment entity subsidiary, why we wouldn't require consolidation down.
I mean, what we're trying to do with this recommendation is just maintain the position that these intermediate parents were in before the investment entity amendments. And inadvertently, this wasn't dealt with in the investment entity amendments. So basically, before the investment entity amendments, these intermediate parents would not have consolidated because they would have been captured by four.
Because in order for the parent to prepare consolidated financial information, don't you believe the intermediate parent would have been involved in making sure its subsidiary's accounts were correct, flowing up to the ultimate parent?
Well,
I mean, I don't think this is maintaining.
I think this is
getting them out of a reporting requirement they didn't previously have. Previously, the intermediate parent's subsidiary needed to have its accounts line by line consolidated by the ultimate parent. Now they will not have to do that at all for anybody. So I don't think this is maintaining. I think this is actually extending the break provided by the parent down to the intermediate parent.
Okay, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm losing the plot here.
Yeah.
And Joanna has her head in her hands. Reinhardt, save the day for us.
Sorry, I was just going to say that I agree with the staff proposal and the recommendation on the basis that I think it does maintain what existed before, and so I think which was in substance is a practical exemption, and I would be supportive of the direction the staff is going.
I think Reinhardt is that expressed the big if. So let me see if I understand. I got a parent here that prepares, for lack of a better description, consolidated financial statements because it's a parent. it has to get the line-by-line information all the way down the ladder. The exception that was created was for an intermediate parent, one step, two steps, three steps, however many, if you meant these fairly demanding tests, such that the only reason you did your own financial statement was to lodge it in a file drawer someplace, that you would not have to prepare consolidated statements at that lower level. If I understood the staff paper, you're saying that inadvertently in the investment entity guidance, we created a situation in which an entity that would previously, deep breath, have had that exception now lost it.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
And so your only intention is to put it back.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Andrew, is that what you understood?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I was just going to say, I agree with the staff that this is maintaining the status quo in terms of external financial reporting requirements.
Which is the only thing.
Another valid point, but that's to do with internal reporting systems, which I don't think is really within the remit of this committee.
Okay. Philippe, and then I'm really losing track of the batting order here.
Understanding of the risks. If this ultimate parent is an investment entity, so is precluded, doesn't have to prepare consolidated financial statements. But if the intermediate parent, about which we have a question, is not an investment entity itself, but an operating entity, when I go up one step to the parent, because of the nature of that intermediate entity, it has to be consolidated by the parent in that case, because it's not an investment service. The parent doesn't benefit from the wait a minute, an investment entity, ultimate parent, which has a subsidiary which is not an investment entity itself, does have to consolidate that non-investment entity.
Only if that subsidiary itself is providing those investment related services.
So if it is,
okay.
So there is a risk then in terms of having an information about a subgroup which is an operating entity and not an investment services entity, not providing any information on a line-by-line basis at the ultimate level. So no one will know what's inside except the fair value. That's a risk, yes.
I think the point that in Quichiro's introduction was saying that the majority or the primary users of that information is the investment entity parent, and the decision in giving the exception was that they are, that the fair value is more relevant to them. If there is a minority shareholding, then they have the option through the existing paragraph four that they could get access to that consolidated information.
For the investors in the parent, but not for the creditors or for the other users at this intermediate level. They will never see the economics of that intermediate parent as creditors, as other users than investors at the top parent. And the ones who can object to the exemption from producing intermediate level consolidations are only NCIs. NCIs can object because they are minority shareholders, but a creditor has no way, except if there is a contract, say, as a covenant, you must produce. But absent any covenant, they have no way to find out what is the substance of that intermediate level.
That is the situation in the existing standard.
Yeah.
This isn't doing violence to anything that wasn't already violated, if you pardon me.
Yeah, well, in the existing standard, because the parent is not, there is no exemption, it will produce consolidated information today that will incorporate that, and at least looking at the parent, you will find maybe it is somewhere in a mass of other information, because absent a segment, you don't have a detailed information about that.
That's my point. Don, and then I'm just going to go around the room because I've lost the order.
Sorry, this is probably not interjecting at the right point now, but I just wanted to come back in on the thing about the wording and this question of whether consolidated accounts prepared under this investment entity exemption or exception are consolidated accounts or not, because this is something when we look at the IAS regulation in Europe, it's applicable to listed entities that are preparing consolidated accounts. So when we were coming to consider the endorsement of the amendments to IFRS 10, it led to quite a lot of discussions in Europe about whether or not accounts prepared by the investment entity using the exemption were consolidated accounts or not. So the only thing I really wanted to say was, in terms of any wording that might eventually appear as a result of these discussions, we would be quite sensitive to the way in which it's worded, because we would hesitate to reopen some of the many discussions that we had before we actually managed to achieve endorsement of this. Thank you.
Tony?
I was going to make two observations. One is, I understand if you do a line-by-line consolidation, the information about a subsidiary is included on consolidation. As soon as the group is of any size, external users can't possibly track what relates to what subsidiary, and there could be several subsidiaries in the same segment. So I'm not sure what value that information is to the investors or creditors or whatever in the subsidiary. And if the parent has written a guarantee or something, then it's the strength of the parent as a whole that's relevant, not the individual piece of it. And so I'm just not sure that there is any loss of information. The other thing is if the clarification the staff proposes doesn't go ahead, there will be a fairly significant structuring opportunity, which is simply to create a subsidiary that delivers investment services, and then those accounts will be consolidated, because there will be a subsidiary and the users are no better off. So I'm just not sure that agonizing over this is actually doing as much good, because it could easily be fixed anyway.
Charlotte?
I think my concern was, I suppose, the logic used. I thought during the process of the investment company and entity amendments, I thought the board was quite adamant that at times consolidated accounts provided more information than accounts where the investment entities were included at fair value, such that they overrode the industry's desire to have it maintained at a higher parent. And they said, no, a higher parent who was an investment entity had to produce consolidated information. We now seem to be going the other way and saying, at this time, we don't think consolidated information is more valuable. I'm not saying I necessarily think it is, I just think it's inconsistent with board decisions in previous places.
Patricia, board member privilege.
I don't know what to say now. I understand the logic of the staff's recommendation that they think this is just reinstating something that was available in the first place, but I share Scott and I think Charlotte's concern that the reasoning that we're using would be equally applicable to any intermediate parent, even if they weren't. So why do they have to be consolidated in the parent in order not to file these separate financial statements? My other concern is that some people seem to be talking about this is only applying to a subsidiary of an investment entity that provides services for, and that's not true, because the investment entity is probably controlling a car company or an insurance company or something, and that's got subsidiaries. My third concern is that a couple of people said, well, the board concluded that fair value information in this case was more relevant, and this would result in that intermediate parent preparing financial statements with its subsidiaries on a fair value basis, and I don't think that's true either. It could be equity it would be cost or fair value, and if our amendment is finalized, the equity method. So I've got concerns about all those things. I don't know how they all interplay with the staff recommendation, but
Laurence?
I'm concerned.
Two comments. The first one is in reactions to Andrew's proposal that the amendment just is eliminating the word consolidated in paragraph 4F4, because I think this opens the door to question when you have combined financial statements that are produced under IFRS. Are the subsidiaries in combined financial statements also exempted? Because those financial statements are produced in accordance with IFRS, but do we allow then exemption for the subsidiaries when the parent entity is producing combined financial statements? So that's my first comment. The second one is picking up on Philippe's case, where he said, so parent entity is an investment entity, subsidiary is a non-investment entity, it's a wholly owned subsidiary, let's assume it's a very big subsidiary, non-listed, 100% owned, which would represent a segment if accounts were consolidated. With this proposal, which I agree maintains the previous situation but extends it, this means that this non-investment entity subsidiary would be exempt from preparing consolidated accounts, even if it is a significant economic entity for which it would be important to have information. Because you would have had information on this entity through segment reporting, through IFRS requirements about information for about significant subsidiaries. So this is what concerns me when I was mentioning LBOs and so on.
Andrew?
Yeah, I do feel we're perhaps making a simple thing complicated. Isn't this just a proposal to address what I think is an unintended consequence?
Yes.
Maybe that's the question for the board. Did you intend or did you not intend to remove this exemption from an intermediate parent entity that's owned by a higher level investment entity? And that's the question. You don't know what you intended.
John?
Yeah, I think what Andrew suggested, asking the board whether they intended to remove the exemption is probably a sensible way forward. Some people have made a comment that, oh, this is just intended to put an entity back into the same position it was in before. The difference is, before, it was actually its parent was providing consolidated financial information, which I understood was the rationale for the existence of the exemption for the intermediate parent. It's now no longer producing that line-by-line information about the assets and liabilities of the group. It's actually producing fair value information with very limited disclosure of the actual operations and activities of these subsidiaries. So the loss of information by extending this exemption from consolidation to these intermediate parents is actually quite significant, and I would be very concerned, and therefore that's why I would not support the staff proposal.
Joanna, last one.
I've been trying to simplify it using Andrew's thing, and in some ways what John has said, saying pushing back the status quo, yes, it is for that intermediate company to say it now allows me to do what I have always done. But actually the situation is different. Because, as John says, my parent that always used to show all the information about my subsidiaries is no longer doing so. So although for me it's putting back the status quo, actually for the public or those looking at those financial statements, it's not putting back the status quo because they're not any longer getting the information, albeit all mixed up with a whole load of other information, that they were getting before. So I personally believe that actually this all goes with investment entity accounting, and I think some of what the discussion is around the table is people grappling with actually liking investment entity exemption, full stop, and I have to admit that I am one of those. But on the basis that it is there, I actually think what you are recommending personally is the right answer. But what I would say is, though, I think we have to acknowledge we are extending it way, quite a lot beyond what actually 4A4 is actually saying, for the reasons that John articulated. And therefore, I actually think, like asking the board the question, that on the basis, on that basis, the safest route is actually not to give the exemption. It is actually to leave it absolutely alone. And yes, it is tough luck for those intermediate parent companies, but it's because of the fact that their parents have now been given this fancy exemption to not allow them to consolidate, that sorry, the intermediates now will have to. So, long way of saying, I actually don't agree with the recommendation, although I personally support that that's the right approach, because it is extending beyond what is currently in 10.
Okay.
Phones?
I think.
Ah, that's right. Thank you, Michael. Sandy, anything to add?
This is hard to follow in person over the phone. It's almost impossible. I feel like it would be hard to make a decision right now because we've discussed so many different things. I'm not certain if everyone is on the same page about the nature of the ultimate parent, the nature of the intermediate subsidiary, or the intermediate parent, and if the nature of the user of this intermediate parent is different because it's an investment company. I mean, I thought I understood the issue when I came to the meeting. I think I'm more confused now, but I sort of feel like I need different iterations of, okay, who's the ultimate parent, and are they consolidating or not consolidating, or, you know, are we using the term consolidation and incorporation sort of interchangeably, and maybe we should or shouldn't? I guess I'm hard pressed to conclude because I'm not certain that I understand all the iterations and what the consequences would be and who the users are of this intermediate parent's financial statements are. I mean, as a rule, I sort of struggle with this because I never think it's more useful in an intermediate parent to say, oh, well, because the parent consolidates, I don't need to have this information consolidated. But I mean, I sort of struggle with that concept as, you know, just as a concept. But I guess I'm not prepared to conclude. I'm not certain that I don't have to think through the issue some more.
Okay. We often find ourselves in that position. I think the way I'd like to phrase the question, and if you turn to paragraph 17 of the staff paper, I both highlighted and underlined the words available to an intermediate parent, step one, that is a subsidiary of an investment entity, step two, but is not an investment entity itself, step three. That's, I would assert, the only situation that we're talking about right this minute, is something that meets those three criteria. So then I'll turn to the team and ask you to restate for that limited case, what is your recommendation?
Okay. So we considered that the exemption from preparing consolidated financial statements set out in paragraph 4 should be available to an intermediate parent entity that is a subsidiary of an investment entity, but that is not an investment entity itself.
Fine. Okay. Show of hands, those who support that recommendation. Six, that's not enough. Well, I think Sandy put herself down as undecided at best. So, Sandy, do you I didn't interpret your comment as being supportive of the staff recommendation.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay.
Fair.
Okay. Staff recommendation fails. Second step. Do we go to the board and ask them what they meant?
Yeah. Certainly, if the board says they meant to have an exemption in that situation, I agree.
Okay. Then what we will, let me show a show of hands on that, and you get to vote twice in this situation. If you, okay, that carries.
Anybody who opposes asking the board?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Board members do not have the power of the floor, but not a board. Philippe?
Actually, we have to go back to the rationale the board followed when designing IS 27, not the investment entity, because this exemption was based on a certain rationale of avoiding a duplication of information. Given the amendment to investment entities, we lose the argument of avoiding duplication because information of a different nature is given. So is it creating a different situation? We didn't discuss it, I think, Patricia, if you remember. I have no recollection of having discussed that point during the amendment to IFRS 10.
No. Oh, no, we didn't. It dated back to... My recollection is Bob Garnett was particularly vocal in support of an exemption or an exception. Other board members were particularly vocal in saying no, consolidation is always better. The case that Bob articulated, as I recall, was one in which there's a regulatory requirement for anything that is a corporation to prepare financial statements in accordance with IFRS, and his assertion was that those statements go to a file drawer in Pretoria or Johannesburg or whatever and sit there, and that there was no user of those financial statements. And all of the 4A, B, C, D, and whatever were situations, and people said, well, yeah, there really is a user, NCI, whatever. So it was, in my recollection, very much a cost-benefit exception rather than anything about whether or not consolidated reporting was superior, inferior, whatever. Okay, we will, we